March 1st, 2001, meeting of the House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry is hereby called to order. I want to welcome and thank all of you for coming here today. Today we have one item on the agenda, and that is HJM 16. Ray, would you tell us a little bit of what that is all about?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. HJM 16 urges the President of the United States, Senate, and House of Representatives of the United States and the Secretary of Agriculture to take action to prevent the demise of the American family farmer, to ensure equality in international trade negotiations, to allow American family farmers to compete in the global marketplace, to encourage development of programs to educate consumers on the importance of buying domestic fruit, produce, and meat, and to encourage the United States Department of Education to develop an agricultural curriculum for elementary students. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. Chair would like to call at this time Representative Betsy Close to come forward and present us with this concept first, and then after her we will have Representative Patty Smith. Welcome to all of you, and numerous other folks that are here to testify today. We appreciate all of you making the effort to be here. Representative, for the record, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Crap, I see it right in front of me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and thank you, members of the Agriculture and Forestry Committee, for hearing House Grant Memorial 16. I've asked your staff to pass out the email, if you haven't seen it, that was originally sent out. It's the press release. For the record, I'm Betsy Close, House District 36, and I introduced House Joint Memorial 16 after I received the email press release from the Tractor Coalition of Hood River, Oregon, dated February 1st, 2001. I became concerned that the beautiful Hood River Valley of Oregon is in crisis because of rising costs, competition for foreign fruit, and other factors. As I read the release and learned about the estimated $28 million loss being faced by 305 Hood River fruit growing families during this year alone, I also thought about the impact on farm implement suppliers, fuel companies, farm supply stores, repair shops, and others. I wanted to act on behalf of these families. And Representative Patty Smith shared my concerns. She also wanted to act, and so we co-sponsored this bill together. I believe the local problem crosses many economic sectors and therefore becomes a critical public policy issue. Like many growers, Hood River fruit farmers get below cost of production prices for their goods. They must compete against cheap, unregulated foreign imports and up to 5,400 full-time Pacific Northwest jobs paying in the balance. The source of that was the economic impact of the 1998-99 Hood River tree fruit industry, Radke, Sievert, and Cornelius, September 2000. I want you to know I support the efforts of the Tractor Coalition to bring to public attention the importance of standing up for Oregon fruit growers and their produce. It is important for the public to understand that our state economy depends on the strength of Oregon industries like farming, as Chair Krupp well knows. For all these reasons, I believe we need to urge the Bush administration, Congress, and the U.S. Department of Education to advocate for American farmers in ways that will give Hood River fruit growers a chance to preserve their livelihood and Oregon's economic health. HJM 16 speaks on behalf of all Oregon growers in your help to defend and promote their excellent products. I thank you for your attention. I ask you for your aye vote on this important measure.
Thank you, Representative. The, if I remember right, the demonstration that the fruit growers held in Hood River involved a lot of tractors, and it was pretty visible, wasn't it?
I was not, Chair Krupp, I was not in attendance, but that is what I understand.
I hear there might be something like that happening soon here. Is that your understanding also?
Chair Krupp, I do not have knowledge of that.
It's March 7th.
People are shaking their heads behind you, so I'm assuming that that may happen here. In fact, I was threatening to drive up my four-wheel drive tractor, but I think I couldn't fit into the parking garage without knocking off the cab, as it were. Well, any questions of Representative Close?
Mr.
Certainly.
Chair, I wouldn't want to pass up this opportunity. Representative Close, who is our number one competitor in the fruit growing business worldwide?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, I believe it's to the nation of Mexico, but I'm not an authority on that.
That's actually a very good question. Maybe someone in the audience can answer. Okay, that'd be great.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
thank you.
Great question.
Well, Mr. Chair,
sure.
Since in the aviation business, we're the transporter for cherries for many years to Japan, and I'm not sure on apples and other fruits, so just curious.
All right. Any additional questions? All right. Thank you, Betsy. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
All right. The chair would like to call next Representative Patty Smith. Welcome, Patty, and thanks for coming here today.
Thank you.
And thanks for co-sponsoring this legislation. For the record, state your name.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm State Representative Patty Smith from District 56, Hood River County. Is my district. Most of my district, a lot of my district. I am a co-sponsor on this with Representative Close, and I thank her for her concern and sponsorship of this. I want to thank her. I also want to thank Camille Hukari, who has done an incredible amount of work on the Tractor Coalition, who you're going to hear from and who will be glad to answer your question. I am a farmer. I've been a farmer all my life, and I would love to drive your tractor next Wednesday here at the Capitol Rally.
Well, Representative, unless I can transport it by flatbed, that means I'm going to wear off a whole set of tires driving up here and back, and I probably don't want to do that.
As long as you don't have studded tires, I think it'll be fine.
No, ma'am, I don't.
Okay. I know how hard this work is in farming, and our farmers are hurting, and this memorial is just one of the few things we can do to help support them. So I ask you and urge you to offer your support for this, not just as a farmer, but as an Oregonian who cares about our agriculture business and all the things it affects and our way of life. And you're going to hear from some farmers today who can really tell you what it's like out there. I happen to raise cattle. Right now, cattle prices are pretty good. You know how it goes. We have about 250 commodities in this state, and they're all up and down at different times. So I think we need to support our tree food industry, and I ask for your support, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative, do we have questions? Representative King, please.
I've got about 7 cases of canned fruit from, you know, Gourmet Canner in Hood River. That's where we buy our fruit. It's just absolutely terrific. And when I share it with folks, they you know, just are real excited at how good it is, and they buy some too. So
great. Thank you very much. You know, the best part of campaigning was I got to go to a lot of those orchards and a lot of those places and partake of their fruit. They do a wonderful job, and we need to do whatever we can to support them. So thank you. And the biggest, your question, Representative Nelson, was the answer is chili.
Chili?
Mm.
Well, interesting.
Interesting.
Yes.
All right. Do we have additional questions of Representative Smith? Certainly. We'll start with Representative King and back with you. Okay.
I think chili is opposite seasons, though, you know, from your seasons, aren't they?
I believe they are, yes. And I will defer to the people who are going to testify who can tell you firsthand.
Then I'll hold my question.
All right.
Great.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming forward with this very, very timely issue.
Thank you.
We have a tradition in this committee of asking individuals who've traveled over 100 miles, giving them a preference in speaking for time consideration. And we have one of those people here, and that is Camille Hukari. Please come forward, Camille. Welcome, and thank you for making the long trek here.
Thank you.
And please state your name for the record.
Camille Hukari, and I'm from Hood River, Oregon, and one of the members of the Tractor Coalition. And I want to thank Betsy Close and Patty Smith for sponsoring this House Joint Memorial and for you for hearing it. This came about, and to answer your question, on February 6th, the Hood River Growers staged a tractor rally and protest. And it was in response to television advertisements coming out of the metro area that it was a beautiful ad showing orchards and cherries and pears and apples, and all of a sudden it was buy Chilean fruit. And we, yes, Chile is an opposite season from us. However, we are right now head-to-head. Our 20 million boxes of winter pears are up against what is typically a 5 million box import from Chile. in the fruit industry right now and will continue through our marketing season, which ends in July.
Camille, let me stop you for a moment and ask you about pricing differences for the fruit that's coming in from Chile. Compared to with what it costs you to produce it, is there a price advantage for that product coming in from Chile?
There is, as far as the producer, the Chilean producer, has a much lower cost than we do. In fact, I was reading an article today where the average Chilean farm worker earns $60 a week. And I pay in harvest season, my average is $100 a day without benefits and without housing. So when we, and that is not atypical for our competitors. And what I would like to point out to this committee is that we're not talking just fruits and just pears from Hood River. This problem it goes over the entire commodity group, whether it be cherries, apples, vegetables, broccoli, tomatoes, whatever. This is not a problem that is solely a problem of the pear industry in Hood River. And I need to make that very clear because we're trying to educate the public regarding our problems. But yes, there's a huge disparity between the wages, benefits, working conditions that the American farmer has to comply with and pay versus our competitors. The other problems, we have regulatory differences, environmental differences, farm chemical usage differences, and subsidy differences. For example, I believe it's in France, the apple growers there are subsidized to the tune of $400 would be our acre, whereas in the United States, the tree fruit growers are not subsidized at all. So we are up against what we call it's not a level playing field, but we are asked to compete in a global marketplace. And we feel, all of us, that yes, we could definitely and can compete in a global marketplace if we had a level playing field. But until we can get some change within the trade negotiations that are now occurring in Washington, D.C., where subsidies, working conditions, social conditions, environmental conditions, et cetera, are looked at, and there's some kind of formula where we can compete that we cannot compete right now.
Camille, let me ask you this question. It's a question that is on my mind, and that I'm asking various groups to do a little research for me. How do you think the issue of NAFTA-GATT trade agreements is impacting this particular situation?
As far as the tree fruits, I'll talk about tree fruits in particular because there are some agricultural commodities that would not agree with me, I'm sure. And that is the tree fruits, the free trade agreements have opened up markets for us. And Mexico is an excellent example. They're now for pears, our number one export market. So from that end, to export, for us, it has been helpful. However, when, for example, Chile, we do not export to Chile, but Chile exports here. We do not export to New Zealand, but New Zealand exports here. And we have differences in trade policies amongst the other countries that they are able to freely import here, but we are not free to export there. And they, not only is the market perhaps closed in some instances, but they add what's called phytosanitary requirements, whereas a district may have a disease such as fire blight or scale, therefore they can throw up a barrier for our product going in, even though we can certify that that particular commodity does not have a particular problem that they're concerned with.
So, Camille, your assertion is that NAFTA has opened up opportunities.
Yes.
But in some cases, it's a one-way opportunity because other countries, we have, in essence, let down our barriers. All comers are coming in. But other countries still are erecting barriers that prohibit our products, in some cases, from going to them. So if that's the case, what opportunity for redress do you have? Do you go to the WTO? How do you work this out?
My understanding is that you have to go and work with the trade negotiations that are now occurring. to set standards and to break down subsidies or whatever it is that you are trying to level out on the playing field.
Okay. Members, do we have questions?
I do.
Please.
Camille, I have great empathy because I guess 35 years ago, we had to plow our family apricot orchards under because we were importing from Iraq. And at that time, you know, it was a very similar situation, and this was Southern California at the time. So I have great empathy for this situation. What would you like us to tell Gordon Smith tomorrow? Precisely because we're all going to see him. I can't think of anything better than 60 of us, you know, taking this opportunity to say exactly, you know, very, if we could say something in 1 minute or 2 minutes to him, what would you like us to say?
I would like for him to help us overcome the barriers to a country of origin labeling.
Overcome
the barriers to a country of origin labeling.
The barriers to a country of origin labeling.
On the federal level.
On the federal level.
Because we think that would help if the consumer knew where
it was coming from. First, by America.
Correct.
Okay.
We would like to be a part of the trade negotiations so that our issues can be raised. And in this, we feel it's important that we have a curriculum in the elementary schools that educates our students about agriculture in general, because so many of them now think that milk comes from Safeway and there's no connection to the farm and what that means.
Camille, in that regard, we had a great presentation 2 days ago about Ag in the Classroom, Extension Service Program, and we really, really want to move forward with that. I think that's got great value for that very reason right there.
That's the concept. And then the last on our list is to educate the American consumer about agriculture and what it means to buy domestic.
And we do that in some other industries, don't we? I know that there was a big campaign in the textile industry to buy American, you know, clothes that are actually spun and woven here in America. I think there's some real value in offering the consumer an opportunity to make a choice there.
And we're very concerned, all of us in agriculture, because we feel it's when you can educate the consumer and they can understand, for example, that we need to support the American farmer in order to be able to feed ourselves. And some may argue it's a matter of national security. And the question that we often raise is, you have to eat. And where do you want your food, meat, and produce to come from? Do you want to be able to supply it from a domestic source, or do you want to be dependent on foreign countries for your food? And unlike oil, if you don't eat, you die.
Mr. Chair, Camille, do we have the same inspection process of the Chilean fruit as is required of you, and are the Chileans required to grow under a prescribed program that our same U.S. Department of Agriculture imposes upon you?
No. I would say no. I'm not completely familiar with what their actual regulations are. But our USDA and federal and state requirements do not overlay on another country. So the answer to that is no. Are they inspected? 1% of the imported meat and fruit and produce approximately is inspected by USDA.
That would be an issue. Would you want us to pursue that issue likewise? Because it seems, it seems awful out of shelter. And so as far as follow-up, please. As far as our U.S. VA, are they separate from whomever's making the decisions to import these fruit? I mean, are there two different entities, commerce importing, and but the U.S. Department of Agriculture having no collaboration with how these products are grown in other countries that we're bringing in for human consumption?
I'm not sure that I can answer that. The importing is usually done by a private company, an importer, just like any other goods. And then they have a point where it arrives on shore, and I assume that's like Hunts Point Terminal in New York, and that's where the inspections occur. That type of thing would be my guess, rather than at the supermarket or something like that. They're inspected as they arrive.
Last question, please.
Please, we have to move.
We're going to move on and move out. But do we have a liaison there in Washington, D.C.? Do the fruit growers have a lobby group in Washington or somebody?
We use Northwest Port Council.
Excuse me, who?
Northwest Port Horticultural Council out of Yakima. And they're primarily trade issues there.
Okay, thank you.
That's one of our problems is the fruit and vegetable lobby. I was talking with Martin Dorn from Senator Smith's office, and the fruit and vegetable lobby is not even on the radar screen in D.C. at present.
We need to work.
Part of our failing,
yeah.
And that's part of what we're doing to try to correct right now.
Okay.
All right, any additional questions? Thank you, Camille. We very much appreciate you coming here today. The chair would like to make note for everyone that we're having difficulty getting a quorum here. We're going to be losing a member in about 25 minutes. And so we very much want to pass this piece of legislation out. So without further ado, the chair would like to call Phil Ward from ODA and any other representatives from ODA and the Board of Agriculture and whomever else you would like to bring up with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If you come up in mass, we move more quickly. Thank you.
Okay.
For the record.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Phil Ward with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. With me, I brought a real live farmer, Reed Saito, who's an onion grower from out here county. And so if you have any questions for Mr. Saito, he has a 4 o'clock with Representative Butler. So we might want to let Mr. Saito, if he has a desire to...
Reed, why don't you share a few thoughts with us, and for the name, or for the record, state your name. Thanks.
Thank you very much. My name is Reed Saito. I'm a member of the State Board of Agriculture, also the president of the Malheur County Onion Growers Association. In reading through this piece of legislation, I think it hits many of the issues right on the head. And I would urge the committee here to pass this. I would like to thank the representatives for bringing this forward, and also for Camille in her testimony. A lot of things that she said apply directly to the vegetable and particularly the onion industry also.
Reed, if I might follow up, what do you think is the most important issue that we're trying to get at here?
I think that's pretty difficult, but I think the bottom line is keeping agriculture viable, keeping American agriculture viable, keeping it profitable in order to keep our farmers in farming. We're losing a lot of growers in our area, and a lot of it is because of foreign competition. A lot of it is because of consolidation of the markets on the other end, where we are losing a lot of really good farmers. And I think that's the bottom line, is how do we keep ag as a viable industry in Oregon?
Thank you. I appreciate that. Phil.
Mr. Chair, just quickly, we have several members of the State Board of Agriculture with us today. Clint Smith against the Black Wall from...
Welcome, Clint.
...from the nursery industry. George Pugh, grass seed grower.
George, welcome.
Margaret Magruder was here, but I think she's escaped. But we are in the middle of a State Board of Agriculture meeting, and they're spending some time at the Capitol visiting with their legislators today.
Great.
Just a couple quick comments in light of the time. we've seen the bill and certainly endorsed the sentiment behind this bill. These are challenging times for farmers and ranchers in this state and in this country. Oregon's no exception to the things that are going around the United States. In 1999, we had the lowest net farm income in this state since 1983. Over 17 years, we've never seen a lower net farm income. Bad combination of record high production costs and record low commodity prices. Nationwide, here's an interesting statistic. Nationwide, over 50% of the net farm income last year came from the federal government. Federal government payments. And Oregon receives fewer federal payments than most states due to the large percentage of crops that we have that don't fit the federal programs. We're not a corn and soybean state, which those grain crops have been traditionally supported by the federal programs. We do not have that situation here. We're a specialty crop state, as you've already heard examples of these crops, and they have never reaped the benefits of the federal programs. And so our growers face these things. They take the brunt of many of these things. There are bright spots. Mr. Smith is a nursery grower, and the nursery industry has been very strong in this state.
Yes.
Over a half billion farm gate value in this state. There have been other bright spots, but generally we've seen tough times in the industry the last couple of years. I just returned from some meetings in Washington, D.C., National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, of which I'm a member. The directors all met in Washington last week to discuss some of these very issues and to begin to develop some policy recommendations for Congress for the upcoming debate on the next farm bill, which is likely to see action here this year. And certainly we believe that there need to be some ways to foster more financial stability for farmers and ranchers in Oregon and in this country. We may ultimately see several changes in federal legislation, meaningful tax reform for farmers and ranchers, perhaps something like a cost of production insurance that works and applies to all commodities. Certainly resources from our federal partners to help us meet the environmental challenges that we're facing in our industry today. I think all these things are things that are going to be a part of the federal debate. How do we maintain, as Reed just said, a viable agriculture in this country? Very important to this country, very important to this state. Certainly the issues facing Oregon agriculture are national and international in scope. And so we think it's very appropriate for you to send your concerns to the U.S. Congress regarding these issues. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Ward and Mr. Saito. I'm curious if the NAFTA agreement has helped us or hurt us. Would it be possible to discuss this now?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair. The U.S. Department of Agriculture would tell you very strongly that NAFTA has had significant benefits to American agriculture. We are currently doing some detailed analysis as to how accurate that is relative to Oregon agriculture. And some of our preliminary analysis would say that Oregon has not fared as well under this agreement as some other parts of the nation, and particularly because of the types of commodities we grow and the competition we face from overseas with these commodities. That said, we need effective trade agreements. Oregon is an export-dependent state, so we need to be able to move our commodities out of this country and into our trading partners around the world. The issue is, in my view, Madam Vice Chair, that we need to make sure that those trade agreements are something that provides a level trade playing field and are consistently enforced by our federal government.
That's as big a problem as anything, isn't it, Phil, the enforcement issue?
Certainly, I think we could see more aggressive enforcement of freight agreements from our federal government. That would be of great benefit for Oregon Ag.
Mr. Chair, follow-up question. Mr. Ward, could you give us a written copy of your testimony, one, please?
I can certainly provide one, Madam.
Thank you.
Secondly, could you give us these particulars as far as a level playing ground so that when I would speak to this issue, actually factually, contractually, I mean, in the terms that the Department of Ag would want us to speak in, and I certainly want to work on this for you.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, I don't think I can turn that around for you before your meeting with Senator Smith tomorrow, but we can certainly put some of that. We're doing some analysis of some of these issues. Even now, there's some staff working on these things, so we should have something for you in the not-too-distant future.
And
excellent.
Mr. Chair, I'm
certainly.
Sorry, I don't know who the new Secretary of Agriculture is.
Secretary Veneman, is it not?
Yes.
Ann Veneman?
Madam Vice Chair, the new Secretary of Agriculture, Ann Veneman, from California, she's a Westerner, will relate to many of the issues that you've heard articulated today.
And all so right. I'm glad
we're encouraged with her appointment to that.
All right.
Excellent. Any additional questions of these gentlemen? Thank you both very much. I appreciate you coming. The chair is going to now take everyone in order that is signed up. I would like to call Piper. Is it Piper Sweeney? Come forward, Piper, if you would, and you're is it Country Heritage Farms?
Yes.
Welcome. We appreciate you coming here today, and for the record, please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Piper Sweeney, and I'm a farmer. My husband's a third-generation farmer, and my son is hoping to farm someday. And we, for the first time in three generations, instead of economic cycle that we're in, it seems to be a downward spiral that no one sees an end to. And so we find that we could compete with other countries if the standards were quality, safety, and taste. You know, we'd win. We'd be competing and we'd win, and that would be great. But the fact is we have to compete with some countries that are paying less per day than we pay per hour. And we have supermarket conglomerates that are able to demand such low prices that we can't even grow it for what they would like us to sell it for. And so it puts us in a position where at this point a lot of farmers are holding on, but we can only go for so long, just holding on. And I just heard last week that there are berries coming in from a foreign country that they believe it will flood the market. Well, we grow Marion berries, and what that means is that we will get maybe what we have put into them if all goes well. And so it's, I know how many hours that my husband puts in. I know how many hours all the rest of the farmers put in. I know how many hours I put in. And I know that we certainly work for less than minimum wage right now. In fact, the USDA statistics said that in 1999, the average net farm income was less than $9,000. And my husband said to me this morning, the analogy of our house. He said, you know, when we built our house, we told the builder to forget the posts and piers, or forget the foundation, just go with the posts and piers. Would we be able to have gotten financing for that house? No. What would our house be worth today? 5 years later? Nothing. And our economy is the same. We need raw product producers. That's got to be the foundation. We need timber, and we need fishing. We need housing. And we need farmers. And without that, we're missing the part of the foundation. And I'm concerned about importing from other countries and that being, you know, where we get most of our food. I think that puts us in a dangerous position. And right now, we may not be there, but we're headed that direction, and that's concerning to me. I'm just hoping that we can send this memorial off to Washington and tell them that this is a economic crisis that will affect them in the future. We might be saving a dollar today and paying $10 later for this. So appreciate your time today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We have questions of Piper. Certainly.
Mr. Chair, Piper, I just want to say, love Marionberry's. Marionberry's shortcake is wonderful. Y'all, I hope we can do something. We want to preserve that. And y'all keep up the hard work.
Thank you.
Piper, do you know, are we increasing our Marionberry exports because of free market agreements?
At this point, no, at least not to my knowledge, but Marionberry production in the there just hasn't been, I don't think there's been a lot of effort towards that, but I think that maybe exports could go up because of it, but I know it's more that the, you know, the price is going down because we're importing so much. And not necessarily Marion, but that's one of the reasons why, you know, this country of origin labeling, I have to agree with it. I think, you know, I think we need it because we need to be able to show Oregon Marionberry is something totally different than what they're shipping in from other countries. And we need to capitalize on that.
Agreed.
Chair.
Yes.
Oh, and Piper, where are they coming from? Who's growing in Chile again?
No, actually, I believe it was, I want to say it's Japan. And it isn't, I don't believe they're calling it a Marionberry. I think it's similar in flavor and quality. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times it'll just come in as a blackberry. Marionberries are a variety of blackberries.
Okay, additional questions? Hearing none, thank you, Piper. We appreciate you coming and sharing your thoughts on this. Chair would like to call Randall Gilbert, Gilbert and Son. Randall, welcome. Thank you for coming. And the chair, while he's doing that, chair would like to recognize former State Representative Jim Welsh, who's in the audience. It's my habit to do that. I'm sorry I embarrass you, Jim. But you will be in front of me momentarily, so you can get back at me. That's fine. Randall, welcome. Thanks for coming. And please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Gilbert. I'm a third-generation farmer. I grow vegetables, grass seed on the same farm that my grandfather bought in 1928.
Right.
And I'm just here to say that we've had to double the size of our farm to keep up with the expenses. We do a lot of things, eliminate costs, increase our yield, and find a more effective way to do the job just to stay in business. The farm has always been able to support two families, but with the recent downturn, my parents have basically gone without a salary for 2 years, and my dad opted this winter to go on Social Security. My mom now works off a farm at the election division, and I just believe that we're the most scrutinized industry, and because we grow food, people have to eat it, and if we mess up, people get sick. So by law, we must complete records, and our products go consistent testing all the time to ensure safety. And these regulations are important to keep the food supply safe, but it also makes it difficult for us to compete. I believe it is possible for us to survive and provide the community and the employees and the environment and everything we live in with, you know, make everything better because we're here. But I think we need a fair playing field to do that. Thank you for letting me testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Randall. We appreciate you making the effort to come here today. How many acres do you farm?
We're about 450 acres.
Hmm.
My grandfather started out with about 40.
I can certainly see why it would be difficult to feed two families on 450 acres with that particular mix of crops. Do we have questions, Randall?
Mr. Chair, I just want to tell Mr. Gilbert that I'm proud of you. And we work hard for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randall. We appreciate your coming and sharing your thoughts. The chair would like to call John McCulley, Tree Fruit Growers Association. John, come forward if you would, please. For the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm John McCulley. I'm here today representing the tree fruit growers, which are the fruit growers like Camille Hukari you've already heard from, so there's not going to be a whole lot more I can add to what she's very articulately told you. I think one issue that I would like to emphasize in supporting the memorial is some of the same things. Again, you've heard the country of origin labeling. It is obviously a federal issue that we would like to have dealt with, but we would certainly seek any support we could from Oregon to encourage our delegation to seek country of origin labeling on a federal level. We think that if consumers knew where the products came from that they were buying, that they would buy American. We are confident of that. I don't understand why retailers would fear having consumers have that knowledge. We think it would be very beneficial. So that would be, the thing that we would emphasize. Is that's one of the issues, of course, in the fruit industry that we're facing, as you heard, Chile's products coming into this country, the apple industry being devastated by what has gone on in China, and what is going on. I mean, the whole fruit industry is going to be affected by that production before too long. So we think that country of origin labeling makes some sense to do something very specific that could help the industry.
John, do you think that the USDA, the United States, is not being as aggressive in terms of enforcement issues with imports and restrictions that they're placing on our imports, other countries?
Mr. Chair, I believe that's true, yes. I think that we could be much more aggressive in our trade negotiations. I think that some countries are able to do things to us that just aren't right. And I think we, hopefully this administration will take it very seriously, the negotiations that we need to enter into to make sure that markets are open to our products.
Questions from John? Hearing none, John, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming. Dave Nelson is next. Dave? Welcome, Dave, and for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Nelson. I'm representing the Oregon Seed Council, which are the grass seed growers of the state of Oregon and the Oregon dairy farmers. We want to lend our support to HJM 16. I think that a good case has been made to date. I'd just like to tell the chair that the price drop that you suffered from in grass seed and the price of your perennial ryegrass seed is roughly equivalent to the European subsidy on a per acre basis of what they're paying in Europe. So it is a significant market effect. We also see games being played in the relationships under the North American Free Trade Agreement. When the California avocado growers are successful in keeping Mexican guacamole from being imported into the U.S., the Mexican officials find phytosanitary problems with grass seed going into Mexico. And so it's a kind of a quid pro quo back and forth game playing thing that I think one of the messages that you need to convey to Senator Smith is that kind of stuff needs to be scrutinized and needs to be stopped in some fashion. It's difficult to prove. It's very difficult to prove. But it's, at the same time, you need to impress upon him the importance of those kinds of activities. Probably lastly, I think that you need to impress upon Senator Smith as you meet with him that Oregon, that the trade negotiations tend to concentrate on major crops. As Director Ward said, Oregon is 90% minor crops. And so even our largest crops, such as nursery and grass seed and so on, are minor crops in the eyes of the federal government. So we tend to fall off the table and aren't foremost in the minds of the negotiators as they're discussing these issues. So we appreciate those who introduced this resolution. I think it's very important to keep it in front of the federal government. They play a critical role in the success of agriculture in this country. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Dave, what's your sense of our ability to respond to these types of, you said it's very difficult to prove when a country is trying to erect de facto trade barriers. How do we deal with that?
Basically, in the grass seed sense, you send people down there to say, let me see it. And that you can't do that with every truckload of grass seed that goes across the border. But you have to work continuously. We work through the American Seed Trade Association to discuss phytosanitary regulations. The more that these countries are involved in these international agreements, the better it is for our producers. One of the seed industry international agreements is called the Uniform Protection of Varieties Agreement, UPOV. And basically what that says is that all countries will respect the patent rights of those proprietary varieties. Chile, for example, does not respect UPOV in toto, and they're trying to become a world seed producer. If you sell seed into Chile, generally in 3 years they consider it to be theirs and free market, and they can reproduce it and send it back. So all of those kinds of things need to enter into these negotiations.
All right. Additional questions of Dave? Hearing none. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate you coming forward. Terry Witt, OFS. Welcome, Terry. Thanks for coming. And for the record, state your name.
My name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I also represent the American Crop Protection Association in Washington, D.C. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to take maybe just a little bit different perspective looking at the problems that our American farmers face. First of all, saying that we wholeheartedly join in others in endorsing House Joint Memorial 16 and do in hope that you will pass it and that it will indeed send a message to our folks in Washington, D.C. One of the areas that I am familiar with is the area of unlevel playing field with regard to the regulatory process, and specifically with regard to pesticides. I know there were several questions asked by members of the committee. What are the requirements in terms of other countries' produce that's coming into our country. While we do not have the ability to affect foreign policy in other countries, in other words, require them to have the same kind of stringent standards that we do through FDA, USDA, and the US EPA, I think that what we have to do is send a message to our legislators in Washington that they need to be aware of the impact of passing additional regulations and burdens on our farmer without having a comparable counterpart of regulation on the other country. And let me give you one example of a recent situation, and I think this really points out the unlevel playing field that many of our farmers are facing, and it will be getting worse. Recently, a law was passed in Washington, D.C. called the Food Quality Protection Act. And really what it is a further increase in regulatory requirements on pesticides that are used in the United States. And it's a requirement on the registration process requiring them to really ratchet down on the potential or possible risk associated with exposure to small amounts of these chemicals. And the effect of the new risk assessment process is about an increase of about 1,000-fold in terms of the risks of the perceived risk associated with these products. And I say perceived because it is a potential risk, not an actual risk. The interesting thing that happens is, as a result of that, the EPA is taking many, many pesticide labels off the market. In other words, products that were available for primarily the minor crops, which, as you've heard, Oregon is a minor crop state. Many of these uses are being taken off the label simply because the manufacturers, there's no economic value for them to have additional crops on their label that would, in essence, add to the perceived risk or the potential risk that a consumer would have by eating these foods. When that happens, an appropriate step or a similar step is not taken in a foreign country. So when we get a pesticide removed from the market here, let's just say it's a pesticide that's available for use on pears, If we get a pesticide taken off the market for pears in the United States, it's illegal for a pear grower in the United States to use the product, period. Regardless of whether there's any residue or any detectable amount at all in the resulting product, in the resulting fruit. The standard that a foreign country would have to meet is that there is no detectable residue on the product coming in, because we can't regulate what they do. We can't say you cannot use the material. We can only say your produce cannot have X chemical as a residue. So they're allowed to use these beneficial tools. Our people are not, and it puts them at a further disadvantage. To make it even worse, our federal government has adopted policies when implementing a risk assessment that are so conservative and unscientific that it even makes the playing field more unbalanced. And let me give you the example that I think is just ludicrous. And that is that if an American farmer, let's just use the pear, if an American farmer uses a pesticide on that pear, they sample that pear with a technique that's good down to a part per billion, let's say, they can't find any residue, any amount of the pesticide at all. It's not considered that it's not considered to have zero residue, so you would think that zero residue or no residue is no risk. The EPA, in their infinite wisdom, says we have to be a little more conservative. We will assume that if the limit of detection is one part per billion, we will assume that that product has half of the detection limit in it. So it's automatically assumed that it has a half of a part per billion, even though it realistically may have zero. So now, not only are we allowing fruit to come into the country that may in fact have residues in it or on it, but we're also taking fruit that's produced in the United States that has no residue and saying it has residue on it because we can't detect it. It's rather, from my perspective, a ludicrous type of imbalance that we have to deal with. Now, I need to very carefully say that I'm not indicating that the fruits and vegetables that are coming in from other countries are unsafe. I don't believe that's true. I do believe they're safe to eat. But we're putting our people at a tremendous disadvantage by not giving them the same tools and not treating them with an equal regulatory process. And it's going to get worse because we're losing chemicals literally every month in terms of labeled use in the area of specialty agriculture. So this is an area where I think we really need to ask our federal legislators to look very carefully at the impact of some of the decisions they make, policy decisions they make, on things like risk assessment. What's the impact on the American farmer versus a country that does not have the sophisticated regulatory systems that we do, but yet we still import their products, and those products are competing with our farmers' products. So I just think that it's a message that we need to really get across. It's a policy decision as much as it is anything else, to be aware of these potential differences and how they can severely impact our farmers. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Do we have questions for Terry?
I have a question for you. Is it possible that, or is there any testing that is done for residue, let's say foreign fruits come in from another country? And we know that certain products that have been pulled off the market here are still allowed to be used in that country. Do we test for that product at all when it first comes in here?
The U.S. Department of Agriculture does do spot testing at port of entry, but it is just that, spot testing. I believe that the numbers typically run less than 2% of the shipment lots actually have a spot test done on them. But again, the real situation is that they have to analyze for all of those materials and actually find a illegal material in order to be able to embargo that that import. And so when you're spot testing at, you know, a few pieces of fruit out of each
out of each shipment, and you're only doing that on 1 to 2% of the shipments, the chances of catching an illegal residue is probably pretty small.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Thank you. Mr. Witt, are the pesticides used in foreign countries of American origin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. In many cases, the pesticides that have been stopped from use here in the United States for purposes other than legitimate safety purposes are, in fact, sold in other countries. DDT is a good example.
Yeah. Terry, thank you very much. We appreciate your thoughts today. And last but not least is former Representative Jim Welsh from the Oregon Family Farm Association. We appreciate Jim showing up here today. This will be, members, this will be our last witness unless there are others that would like to testify. And at that point, we'll end our public hearing and go into work session. Mr. Jim, welcome. Thank you.
Chair Krupp, it's great to see you. And it is nice to be before a farmer as a chairman here.
Indeed.
The committee members, I'm Jim Welsh, giving testimony for Oregon Family Farm Association. We echo everything that's been said here, most certainly. And it's great to have Terry Witt to explain some of the things that part of my testimony in the very first part of it is certainly about the regulatory aspect of this issue. We are small in numbers as American family farmers. We know that, but our product is essential to a healthy and vibrant independent nation. We should be able to produce the greatest share of our consumer needs on our American soil, but we are facing certainly great odds, formidable odds. Laws passed, as Terry was talking about, by our federal government have become more and more restrictive through increasingly demanding regulation. And we were in 4 hours yesterday of testimony that was basically created by further regulation by a regulatory agencies of federal government. And we responded certainly by more regulation at the state level. And we have costs. Those regulations are costs to our family farmers. They're always going to be. And when are we going to say enough is enough? That's something we're going to have to stand up to and realize, or we'll be completely out of the ability to farm in America. And we'll be strictly relying on third world countries to produce and provide for us. If we have any kind of a crisis with those countries, where are we? It then becomes a national situation, a security situation. It is, in the bigger picture, something that we really need to face, and that message we need to take to the federal government and our congressmen, certainly to our president, because I think he has an ear for this. So I appreciate what you're doing here in HJM 16. We do as Oregon Family Farm Association, and we support that. And without any further money has been said, I will close. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you also coming here today. Do we have additional questions? Jim, thanks. Appreciate it. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Tim Bernasek, Oregon Farm Bureau, come forward, please. Welcome, Tim, and for the record, state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Bernasek with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I was not planning on testifying today, and I will be brief because I think we do have quorum here and want to hold on to that.
Just barely.
I just want to enter for the record, and I apologize. Again, I wasn't intending to testify today, but I want to enter in the record an article that was in The Economist magazine, February 17, 2001, and it talks about Chilean farm workers and the sad reality that they face in that country. Talks about a female farm worker that worked a hard 60-hour week and took home her paycheck of $60 after that time period. Talks a little bit about the safety regulations and other things, and I think that it just highlights the situation that we've been hearing about today, the imbalance in regulatory burdens that our farmers in this country face as we're competing with one of our prime competitors, being Chile. And certainly we don't, the Farm Bureau doesn't suggest that we roll back regulation after regulation, because a lot of these regulations are important. However, I think that as we talk about trade and trade issues, somehow we've got to bring that to the forefront. But maybe we can, some of the good regulations that are that are here in this country that provide safe food and provide a good living standard for farm workers in this country, that maybe we need to figure out a way that we can raise some of those standards in other countries as well. So anyway, I again, perhaps the committee administrator can make copies, or I'd be happy to make copies and submit them later, but would like to enter that in the record.
Thank you, Tim. We appreciate that. We'd appreciate having that as copies. Thanks for your comments here. Appreciate them. If there's no one else who'd like to testify, we're going to close a public hearing on HGM 16 and open a work session on HGM 16. The chair would entertain a motion to do adopt HJM 16 to the full House.
I so move.
So moved by Representative Krieger. Any discussion? Hearing none, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Representative Ackerman?
Excused.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Vice Chair King?
Excused.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye. Excused.
Aye. HJM 16 is hereby passed to the full House with a do adopt recommendation, and the chair will be the carrier. And with that, we want to thank all of you for coming here today. We are adjourned.